Ramsey Lewis Trio live at the Bohemian. It's just called a Bohemian. It's formerly called the Bohemian Caverns, but people called it the Bohemian in Washington, D.C., the in crowd. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Wednesday, August the 5th, 2015. And the in crowd includes, you should know, because you will have to be prepared for tomorrow, the in crowd includes former Florida Governor Jeb Bush, Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker, Texas Senator Ted Cruz, Kentucky Senator Rand Paul, Florida Senator Marco Rubio, retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson, former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, and Ohio Governor John Kasich. That's the in crowd. Well, the second level folks, the second tier people, include former technology executive Carly Fiorina, the only female running so far, declared so far in the presidential race. We have Rick Perry. We have Rick Perry, the former Texas governor. We have Louisiana, former Louisiana governor, fully soon to be, Bobby Jindal, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum, George Pataki, former governor of the state of New York, and Jim Gilmore, former governor of Virginia. Now, the ones who made the cut, I want you to pay attention to the language today, because it is, I call it a new kind of democratic process. It's a very undemocratic process, as a matter of fact. Trumped and outfoxed. It is the Republicans' undemocratic debate. And a bloviating billionaire shall lead them into that debate tomorrow at prime time. All of these things are coming together to just let you know the level to which public and political discourse has sunk. It has become a game. Welcome to the presidential celebrity apprentice, a Donald Trump Fox News production. And I mean, you have to get concerned when the Washington Post, the stalwart publication, asks today in its headline, "Can Donald Trump beat his own huge television ratings in Thursday's debate?" I mean, this is what is bothering the media. Can he do it? Can Trump out-Trump Trump? Listen to the argument that they're making in the Washington Post today. I got to find it. I put it. I mean, all they're talking about is ratings. Pew Research, says the Washington Post, looked at interest in the 2016 election cycle back in March, finding that people were paying less attention than they had before the two most recent cycles. And an additional poll from CBS reinforces that. Only a quarter of people are paying a lot of attention to the race. But regardless of the trend in primary debate interest, it tends to be that it increases as the actual voting approaches. That makes sense for a lot of reasons, including that earlier debates don't often include the fully established field. And they go on to rationalize this whole thing about interest in debates, public interest in debates. But here's what the Washington Post is positing today as a major point of interest and concern. In order for the debate to beat The Apprentice, that is the program, Celebrity Apprentice, that Donald Trump was executive producer of. Fox News, that is the organization, the news organization that will be hosting this debate tomorrow, Fox News will have to match ratings that only late 2012 Republican debates managed to achieve, which, given how well things have fallen into place for the network, seems more than possible. That's what's really bugging the Washington Post today. What about ratings? Can they really measure up? Can Trump out-Trump Trump? Can he do even better? Can he get higher ratings even than Celebrity Apprentice? This is a national newspaper on the eve of what is supposed to be a pretty significant debate among Republican rivals, a debate that should bring to light the issues that they believe that the nation ought to be concerned about, and more importantly, to tell the nation where they stand with respect to these issues. The Washington Post says the real issue is about ratings. And you know what? They're right. It's a sick thing. It is really right on the point. Because when you really look at it, everybody involved here in one way or the other is participating in a kind of bizarre, sick charade. This has nothing to do with substantive issues. It is mass marketing. It is about everybody having a shared interest in gaining the public's attention, not to educate the public about the issues, not to really explore the major issues of the day that this nation and significant portions of this nation are coping with or concerned about every single day. The main thing here is just to get their attention. And in this, it is a sick and incestuous orgy of interests, masquerading as something of a democratic process and something that should now concern you as part of your civic pride. You should be concerned about what the Republicans are thinking. But let's take a look at this undemocratic Republican debate. First of all, it is significant that Fox News is hosting this debate. That should tell you something right there. And what does it tell you? It tells you how the media literally function in the United States as part of the political disorder that we've been suffering from for so long. They're part and parcel of it. They're an active participant in this business of public, promoting public ignorance and playing with people's minds. Fox News is a well-known conservative news outlet, right of center, in some cases, very far right of center. But here's the thing about Fox News. Fox News has been leading in the ratings. It is the leading news outlet in the United States of America. It is leading all cable news and television news. In every major segment, it is an incredible machine. It gets to do two things. One, it is discussing issues, but it is actually actively cultivating a segment of America and basically keeping that pot boiling ideologically with the way it covers its news. And that is the conservative right of center, and in some cases, even far right of center, segment of America. Fox News has decided this is a segment that they want to have dominance in, and they have done it. They have long ago identified this segment as having great political value, which is one thing, that it reflects their own thinking, their own editorial thrust, and it is tied to a juggernaut of sorts, which is the Republican Party and other right of center movements. So it has been a consolidator of ideological thought in the United States on a consistent basis, feeding that via its news, quote, coverage, unquote. So it has been doing the work of galvanizing this segment of America, and it's been doing it very, very well. The reward has been, and it is proof that it has been effective as a news organization, is that it consistently is leading in the ratings, always at the top for more than the last 2-3 years now. Fox News is at the top. Now, if you had said this some 5, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, no way, because the news was said to be riddled with liberal sentiment and leaning left of center. But Fox News astutely galvanized its ideological underpinnings coming from all these different places, whether through political parties or political organizations or political sentiment. And it put all of this under the umbrella of news, and its news coverage is fully in service of the informational needs of this particular segment. They've done a fantastic job. They've grown exponentially, and they are number one on the news totem pole. They are at the top. What does this mean? It translates not only to power and influence, it translates into money. Because the more eyeballs that you have, the higher the rates you can command for advertising. Advertisers are interested in numbers. They really, to a large degree, ideology and all of that is really secondary. They're interested in reach. And if you can demonstrate reach, and Fox News can, because the arbiter of reach, the Nielsen ratings, consistently verify that Fox is reaching more and more people in the United States. That is music to advertisers' ears. So it relates to revenue. So Fox has been doing well across the board. It has built an organization. It is effective. It is reaching constituencies that it is galvanizing and continues to galvanize with its brand of information and news coverage and news analysis. And it is making money because this huge pool of people that is growing, constantly growing, is attractive to advertisers because they are interested in reach. So we have a wonderful marriage here. But the fact that Fox is now going to host these debates. Fox is making the statement, and don't miss it. And the other news organizations are very clear about the hierarchy by deciding, being the first news organization to host the first debate. Fox News is saying, understand that we are at the top of the heap. Everybody else has to stand in line because you are lower down than we are. We are at the top of the game. So CNN, MSNBC, CNBC, whoever else you are not Fox. We get first dibs. So that's that element of this debate. Because I always remind you that when you get into these kinds of analyses, you have to always appreciate the environment in which things are occurring. What is happening here? So what is happening here is Fox definitively has established itself as an information leader and as a media giant. It has first dibs. And that says something about its accomplishment in garnering and solidifying its conservative base in the United States. Secondly, it's feeding off of this bizarre kind of, I could only call it a kind of commodification of information and so-called news. And what's the word? You make a reality show out of even things like politics that people used to take very, quote, seriously, unquote. Here comes Donald Trump with all of his bizarre antics, but very, very strategically calculating that he was going to resonate deeply with the same kind of audience that a Fox News is likely to reach. Bashing Mexicans as a way of inflaming the discussion on immigration, which is a big touchstone at Fox. And the people who gravitate informationally toward Fox. So he's not crazy. He's making, offhanded comments. It looks like he's, kind of not thinking, but he's thinking very strategically. Because in 6 weeks, this man went from, I don't know, to the top of the heap with 23% of the ratings. And Fox gets to establish the rules that the debate will include only those candidates who consistently have performed at the highest levels in five major national polls. So it sets the rules. This is a very undemocratic process. There's no need here to pretend that there's democracy. There isn't. It's like a reality show. It's like Celebrity Apprentice. The first cut has been made, and that was made by a news organization. I want you to pay attention to this. They're saying all this romantic stuff that you have, you and I share, about wanting to hear as wide a range of thought as possible about the issues of the day and where candidates stand. All that is nonsense. It is about how you perform in the polls. And now Fox arbitrarily has decided that that is the measure of and the standard of effectiveness and validity. If you are not performing well in the polls, it means you're not a valid candidate. And they set up the rules right there. And the candidates are all going along with it. So we have the phenomenon here of a historic moment, whether you agree with Republicans or you don't agree with Republicans, it's not important. What is important is this is a historic moment. We have a field, a crammed field of Republicans vying for the top post. It is history-making. It's unprecedented that you have this many candidates looking to, basically land the White House a top prize. And here you have an organization and other organizations that will come later on to host other debates. The media is what I'm saying. The media, the institution of media, has now positioned itself as official arbiter of effectiveness and what you and I need to know. A candidate may very well be very, very effective, may very well have something to say, but probably is underfunded and could not, like, say, Donald Trump, afford the kinds of media attention and media ads and media campaigns that other well-funded candidates had and have, and therefore, by virtue of that, is just wiped out. You didn't make the cut. It is a really sick kind of thinking, but it has already been made to be acceptable. The Washington Post is not objecting in the little snippet that I read to you. It is not objecting to the process at all, because the Washington Post, the so-called liberal establishment, is perfectly in line with the conservative Fox News. The media decide arbitrarily, we are in charge. We are in charge of what you know, what concerns you, how you should see the world, and it is fitting that we handle this process. So they're all in this together. They're all in this. This is the orgy. They're all in this together. And they like their roles because this is the power to affect your mind. This is the war for your mind. And this is the eternal battle. The battle is for your mind. And when people share this as a common battle, they set aside all the other things that they think don't matter. It doesn't matter about journalistic standards. That wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter about fairness and objectivity. These things don't matter. What matters is that they are in company with each other as setting themselves up as the arbiters of what it is we know and how we get to know it. So in that, to that end, the Washington Post has no quarrel with Fox News, and it has no quarrel with journalistic standards. Not at all. Because it has no quarrel, even about the process, about this business of a debate essentially being run as a kind of reality show. And that Donald Trump, one person, has basically turned everything upside down to such a degree that he's actually calling the shots, and they're all going along with it. They're all going along with it. I'm just fascinated by it. I'm fascinated that this thing is happening out in the open. And it doesn't seem to trouble media organizations at all. They want to be part of it. Now, the question is why? Why are they behaving this way? What is it that is motivating them? Bottom line, it's money. It's money. This election cycle for president in the presidential race is expected, according to industry experts, it is expected to generate as much as $5 billion in advertising ads. That is huge. That's a huge amount of money. And every single media organization wants a nice fat chunk of that money. You're not going to get that money if you don't play ball. So that's why we see an Anderson Cooper, who is touted as this great newsman, sitting there like a little choir boy while Donald Trump has his way with him, just smacks him around all over the place. And the leading newsman for CNN sits there quietly and takes it. He does not in any way overtly challenge or upset Donald Trump because he already understands what he's supposed to do. When that money, when the sluice starts opening up, and these candidates now start getting into their campaign budgets, and these media organizations understand that there is a pot of a potential pot of as much as $5 billion that they can go after. And it's not going to happen like that every day. The presidential race isn't run every day. These campaign budgets are not going to be available to them every day. So, in the presidential season, where you have all this money floating around, and these leading candidates are likely to be connected to huge sums of money for their ad media outreach and advertising campaigns, they will behave themselves and go along with the program. Anderson Cooper's series of interviews with Donald Trump, which are quite forgettable, they're not particularly insightful, they don't even demonstrate a superlative skill at interviewing on the part of Anderson Cooper. But what it was proof to Donald Trump, principally, that the organization, the CNN network, has done its bidding to make nice. And hopefully, when the time comes for CNN's sales department to knock on the door of Donald Trump's presidential campaign, should he continue with it, and they ask for an appointment to sit down and discuss how much money are they going to be spending with CNN, Donald Trump would be kind to reflect on the fact that CNN gave him a lot of airtime and little opposition. CNN played nice. You see how it works? That's how it works. Now, just this week, Sister Hillary opened up her little purse, and $2 million flowed out of it into Iowa and New Hampshire, where she has begun to run her political ads. It's not by campaign standards, it's not a lot of money, but $1 million in advertising, campaign ads, and in each state, for each state, there's $1 million of money to get. Now, you know, even though she needs to reach that wide swath of people who may still have questions about her, who may still be kind of iffy about her. In these two states, which are the first states to hold the primaries for 2016, and it's important to reach out to what she believes would be a good targeted audience that might be sympathetic to her, she's willing to spend $2 million, and that started this week. Now, you don't think that she's going to spend that money with any media organization that has shown her, kind of a cold shoulder, or that has beaten her up. Oh, no. The money, the priority will go to those media organizations that have played nice, that have basically touted Hillary as the pretty much the Democratic front runner and the Democratic nominee, just taken the arbitrary stance that Hillary is the undeclared candidate. She's the undeclared nominee. She only just has to go through a little formal stuff, but she is the one that they're backing. And that's what's shaping this whole thing. And this is the incestuous relationship that the media organizations are having at this moment. And it's going to get more and more intense, because when the money starts flowing, let me just give you an example. Barack Obama's campaign for 2012 spent in excess of $700 million in media buys. This is the kind of money I'm talking about, the kind of money that's out there. And that's just from the candidates' campaigns. Now, you have sympathetic political action committees that are raising millions, hundreds of millions of dollars that themselves will want outlets to reach out to get their message across in favor of whichever candidate that they're supporting. So it's not just the candidates And the millions, the up to $5 billion expected to be spent in this election cycle. On top of that, you have other organizations raising their own money to basically spread the word about their own agendas in favor of a particular candidate or the other. So this is a lot of money. So what do you think? You and I, we're so naive. We think this is about debates. We think this is about letting America know where people really stand. We think this is about really getting into it, a slugfest over ideological differences. We think that this is about matching unsheathing these hidden agendas. No, it's not. For all of these candidates, the ones that they have selected arbitrarily, and they say, well, this is about, how you perform in the last five polls, and we know what that's about. It's money, because that's how you do well in a poll. You have the money to conduct an effective marketing campaign. So even the pollsters are aware that how a candidate resonates with the public is largely a function of the money they spent, and the coverage that they got for the money that they spent has nothing to do with the validity of their ideas, has nothing to do with their positions, has nothing to do with putting their feet to the fire and really holding them accountable for their positions that are askew with the positions that they currently are taking. As demonstrated again with Anderson Cooper's series of interviews with Donald Trump. It was a blisteringly credible example of how media organizations in these election cycles, they prostitute themselves. They make themselves wholly and totally available for money. And that's the exchange. And then they have the nerve to position themselves as, above suspicion. We are here doing the good work of journalism. We are here as the stand-in for the public. We are here as the guardians of truth. No, you're not. You're there to lay the groundwork for the sales department so that it could pick up the phone when the time comes and make a nice pitch to the advertising or the marketing components of each major candidate to get a chunk of that money that is coming down the pike. So don't be fooled. Remember, there is a context for everything, and most things are not what they seem, especially as it relates to politics. But we should appreciate the historicity of things. The historic moment that we're in, where number one, I think the media have absolutely and unashamedly crossed the line here. They're not even apologizing. Pretending that is something other than what they're saying that we recognize. That we are playing the role, we have a service to offer, and it is available for money. And this is the nature of our relationship with the political process at this point. We're not here to rock any boats. We're not here to conduct any major investigations. We're not here to embarrass anybody because that could cost us money. And if you think that this is just the decision made by the individual interviewers and talk show hosts and whatnot, understand that this is the expected attitude within the culture of these organizations. It's a top-down directive. It may even be in writing, I don't know, but everybody understands what it is. In an election season, you will not be overtly offensive to any of the candidates who we think we can get a lot of money from in terms of advertising. They will do the obligatory story now and then when it is unavoidable, like Hillary Clinton. It is unavoidable that, you have to pay attention to the fact that this email scandal is haunting her, and other things that are coming back to bite her in the butt. So you have to report that, but you report it without going the extra mile. You're not going to really expose Hillary Clinton. You will do, due diligence. You just so the record shows that you have done your journalistic duty and you have reported that some agency is looking at her. Not you, not the organization, but the agency. So you have a defense. You're reporting the news as it unfolds, but you're not taking on the job of really unmasking Hillary Clinton. That is not what you're going to do. Not now. It's not going to happen. Play nice, go with the flow, don't upset anything, because even if you individually feel that you want to do a good job as a journalist, your organization is not going to permit it. Too much money involved. Too much money involved. They're not going to permit you to do these kinds of stories. Not at all. First, let's get the contract signed for the advertising campaign. Let's put that behind us, and then we go from there. We'll see how it goes. But let's nail down the sales piece first. And in the meantime, we amuse the public. We give them pap. We give them stories that are really largely inconsequential. We talk about Donald Trump as a phenomenon and his marketing skills and his superlative abilities to sell ideas, even if he's brash, even if he's this, even if he's that, even if he said racist things. It's, you have to appreciate, in the end, his remarkable and astute use of marketing skills. All right, so now you know. As you watch the debate tomorrow, you will, and you should observe how both sides, the media hosts, the Fox media hosts, and the candidates, you will observe how they are playing the game together. They have different objectives, but in the end, it's about money. It's all about money. And the political piece of it is merely the conduit by which the media gets to make money and the candidates get to have some kind of exposure for free. By the way, it should be said that one of the geniuses of Donald Trump, because he's a many genius man. He's a genius in so many different ways. But one of his geniuses is saving money. Saving money, advertising money that he would normally have to pay. Donald Trump would have had to pay millions of dollars to get the kind of coverage that he has gotten for free so far. And the media organizations understand that. This is a kind of trade-off. We'll give you airtime, we'll give you coverage, we'll make you to be one of those iconoclastic guys, and we're not going outside of it. We're not going to get into anything malicious. We're not doing any of that. We're not doing true investigative journalism here. But understand that when we have that conversation, meaning the sales department has this conversation with your people, we will be able to demonstrate how much free time we have given to you and your campaign, how much free coverage we have gotten, and we will quantify it as in-kind services. You have already gotten X number of dollars worth of coverage from us, and that will work as a big sales pitch when CNN sits down with Donald Trump and says, look how much time we gave you. We gave you X number of hours worth of coverage. We have talked about this, that, and the next. We have pretty much been an arm of your PR department. We have done the job for you. We have built you a wonderful constituency. We have sold you to people that you couldn't do this on your own about. So you should keep these things in mind when we now start to talk some money. What is the quid pro quo? Quid pro quo. And that is what is ruling all of this right now. Frankly, it is way too early in the game to get excited about anything. The media wants you excited. They want you to think that something dramatic is happening in terms of, ideologically where the country is going, where these candidates, the various candidates stand with issues that you think are important. They want you to think all of that. There's so much excitement about this race. And that too is part of the process of creating value for coverage that they will cash in on later. I just want to explain to you the process so you don't get all excited. Oh my gosh, it started and they're covering the races. The race isn't on. The race isn't on yet. What is happening is a kind of, they're testing each other out and they're kind of coming to terms, the media and the campaigns. They're trying to just winnow the field down so that they could get down to business and really do business. Start talking money. Let's get these budgets allocated. And then we will see where we go from there. That's really what's happening right now. In the meantime, we will be entertained. We will be distracted. There are all kinds of things that will come up as huge stories that are really inconsequential. The things that you need to know will not be touched. They're not going to be touched. If ever, they're certainly not going to be touched now. It's way too early. But they do want you excited. Because if you are excited, you're likely to turn on and watch the news. And then Fox News can say, look, we got X hundreds of thousands more viewers. That means that they could go to their advertisers and say, see, we are the best. And here's why. Nielsen says we are number one. And we've been number one for these last few years. So this drumming up of an excitement of, major ideological quarrels going on and debates and all of this. This is part of the environment that they're creating. Nothing substantive is really happening. Nothing major and earth-shattering is really happening. It is just, let's get people excited. Let's get them to watch TV more. Let's get them to listen to these outlets more. Let's get the groundwork going so that we could make the case that we have X number more eyeballs watching, X number of ears listening. See? And that is really what is happening right now. I know, it sounds cynical, doesn't it? It sounds like a cynical view. But I guarantee you, it is absolutely dead on. Nobody would tell you this. But this is the cycle of national campaigns. Everybody knows there will be big money coming, huge money coming. But in the meantime, they have to do all kinds of things to basically amuse the public and distract the public and even anesthetize the public, so that you're not even inclined to think seriously about things. It's to entertain you, to give you the impression that something major is happening right now. Nothing is happening right now. Don't worry about it. If something is going to happen, it will happen later on, as you get closer to the 2016 election date. But for now, understand what the priority is right now. The priority is, who is going to get their hands on this pot of money and what they have to do in order to make the case that they deserve the hugest chunk of it. The media wants the money. The candidates are raising it. As I said, according to the experts, almost $5 billion in advertising money is going to be available for this 2016 presidential cycle. Do you think any media organization wants to jeopardize their shot at it? No. And all of the media understand that. That's what they're all doing. They will do the perfunctory reporting, and they will do things that look like they are operating journalistically in the public interest. But they're not. They're simply setting the stage for the big sale. When the shift occurs, you would know when the shift occurs. And by that time, the contracts would have been signed and the commitments made. But everything so far, and for the next several months, it would be the media proving to the candidates how worthy they are of a sizable chunk of that money. And in order to enhance their sale, in order to enhance their shot at that chunk of money, they will have to show what they have provided in terms of coverage, how they have shielded these candidates from any kind of harm, how even when they report things that candidates may see as harmful to their prospects for success at the polls, that it was just a matter of doing their journalistic duty, but they didn't go the extra mile and do more harm. They behaved themselves. So they're behaving. So we have, nonetheless, to recognize certain changes that have occurred here. One, again, we have the advent of the presidential celebrity apprentice. It has happened. So we have introduced to us as the American people a different way, a different configuration of the political landscape. We have the media emphatically performing the role arbitrarily of who gets to be known and who gets not to be known. What issues get to be covered, what issues don't get to be covered. All under the guise that these things are being done in order to facilitate a debate. But actually, it is the media affirming, media organizations affirming themselves as the mechanisms of control of information. And you need to understand that. We have definitive proof of the rise of the influence of the conservative elements in our society via the controls exerted here by Fox News as the first host and as the leading news organization now in the United States. That is significant. If you are a progressive person, that should be significant to you. And we certainly have incontrovertible proof that there is a shared interest here, both among the candidates and among these media organizations. And the shared interest is about money. One group has it, the other group wants it, but they are both trading off a huge part of the trade-off will be, what have you done for me lately? The media have clearly shown that they're not interested right now. They will not do anything to jeopardize revenues to their respective organizations, either now or in the future of this campaign, by doing their jobs of brisk and rigorous journalism. They're not going to do that. They are here to be, as we saw very clearly with Donald Trump, they are willing participants in their many of these candidates' PR efforts. They are extensions of their campaigns, and they serve willingly in that capacity because so much money is at stake. Well, I've talked my butt off today. I hope this was interesting. Let me know at leadstories@gmail.com, and I hope it gives you an idea. Don't get all flustered. Don't let them, get into your head. Just understand what it is you're looking at, and the thing that you should cherish most at this time is clarity. As long as you know what the reality is, you're good to go. Clarity is what you seek, and clarity is what I hope this program offered you today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, NBC Savings Club. And tell everybody you know about PRN, and selfishly, tell them about Lead Stories on PRN.FM. Thanks so much for joining me today. I hope I did a good job in conveying to you the seamy underside of political debates. And we'll see each other tomorrow. In the meantime, please know that I consider it a great pleasure and an even greater privilege to be in your esteemed company. Bye-bye.